What's up, guys? Welcome back to West Coast Bias, Season 4, Episode 3, special NBA Finals edition of the podcast. Since we have not been here for the whole playoffs, we'll probably go into some of the earlier series in a little more detail, but we're really going to focus on the finals, the conference finals, and kind of our thoughts on Kawhi versus Giannis versus Durant and all that drama that's going around. That'll really be the meat of it, and then we might go into a little bit of Blazers Kings summer slash draft talk prior to our mock draft pod, which will be coming up in a few weeks. Really interested. First of all, let's start with the conference finals, specifically the Raptors Bucks. What were your thoughts on that series specifically as it relates to Giannis versus Kawhi and Giannis going forward?
Well, the big question is Giannis bad now? Which seems to be the question after basically every playoff series this year is, wait a second, is this main player now bad? It was every single player on the Philadelphia 76ers, but most specifically Ben Simmons. It was Russell Westbrook. At one point, somehow, it was all of the Portland Trailblazers separately, even though they made the Western Conference Finals with a team projected to win 45 games. At one point, it was even every single Los Angeles Clipper that somehow won 8 more games than they should have. I think that's just how the playoffs are going these days. You need something to talk about. The cycle resets so quickly that you need to talk about whether or not somebody who's clearly good is in fact actually bad. Right. And yet with that in mind, Giannis bad.
Well, so my theory on this has not changed. And what I've been saying, one of the reasons why I thought the Raptors were going to make it over the Bucks, even when the Bucks were probably still are clearly the best team in the East in a lot of ways, is that I think you have to have your best player who can hit a jumper, and that's been my problem with Ben Simmons forever. And even though Giannis is clearly trying, and I actually don't think his jumper is all that bad. People forget, first of all, he's only 24, and it's bizarre to think that he's probably not going to be, he could be twice the player he is right now in 3 years when he's, 27 or whatever. But I think this playoffs more than ever really showed that in order to be a championship contender, you have to have a wing who can hit shots. Despite the fact that the Warriors seem to be doing just fine without KD, but specifically in the East, I think a lot of us kind of forgot how good, including myself, forgot how good Kawhi was. I definitely forgot how good he was, specifically in the playoffs, and how he's pretty much the ideal guy to have as a playoff team. And I think he really accentuated Giannis's deficiencies, especially in the fact that, prior to 2014 or whatever, we never thought of Kawhi as a shooter or of anything. But now he's close to a 50-40-90 guy, which is really, again, accentuates the deficiencies Giannis has.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me about Giannis is he has that shot, but he doesn't really have any way to get to it. He's not exactly a pull-up shooter. He's not a guy who's running around off the ball to get these opportunities. They don't really run. Anytime they have him as the roll man in pick and roll, they never really run up top. It's always him just attacking. And not only that, but he also doesn't really have a floater option when he's attacking from the mid-range. He doesn't really have anything he can settle for. And that's not really the most efficient shot you could have, obviously, but it's something that can really just change the way you can attack. And it's something you really also see in both Ben Simmons and Lonzo Ball are guys who really don't have that ability to finish between the three-point line and the rim. Obviously, Ben Simmons doesn't have an opportunity to finish before the three-point line either, which is something he has behind both of the other two. But it's a real problem with some of these big point-type players that are now, we're seeing they have all this versatility, but they don't have the fundamental things they need to play the positions they're playing. So if we're talking about Giannis as this guy who is primarily a LeBron James type, primarily a heavy on-ball player, and secondarily is this pick-and-roll power forward who's playing off-ball when he's not really able to produce on his own, at least he has something he can do. He can be that role man, and we kind of saw that in the series with both George Hill and Eric Bledsoe, certainly more successfully with Hill than Bledsoe. But at the end of the day, he's still, when you have to find creative ways to use your best offensive player, that's not a good sign about your best offensive player.
Right, and I think that, and a lot of people have said this, and I think it's very true, and seeing the Blazers go through a deep playoff run really brought this out for me, is that how different the playoffs are than the regular season, and that you're seeing these great regular season teams like maybe the Blazers last year, obviously the Bucks to a greater extent this year, the Rockets as a general phenomenon over the last 5 or 6 years, who just can't seem to get over the hump in the playoffs. And for the Bucks, it's because in the playoffs, teams have time to figure it out. And yes, Toronto is an amazing defensive team. They're kind of uniquely equipped to deal with Giannis in that they have not only a fantastic on-ball defender in Kawhi, but also two very mobile, or at least one very mobile and one former defensive player of the year backing him up. So if you're going to trap Giannis, you have either Ibaka or Kawhi or even Danny Green to do that, which is something they did really well, and credit to Nurse for kind of figuring that out. But I don't think if you can't make a jump shot, and Giannis' shot, honestly, just not that bad, but clearly it's not something he's comfortable relying on. Like you said, he doesn't have the pull-up jumper, which is key. We see that with Durant every year in the playoffs now. Kawhi, obviously, is a great mid-range shooter. So even though maybe in the regular season these mid-range twos are not quite as valuable, when you're turning to ISO options in the playoffs, it really is something that you need to have on your team. And these teams, like, unless you're the Warriors, really, in there, but every other team that's made it anywhere near has had somebody who can hit that shot or at least get to that spot.
Yeah, and you're kind of seeing this. We talked about somebody who's not really the primary ball handler for their team who can't shoot. You're kind of seeing this come up more and more. Every single draft, there's a player like this. The whole thing with Ja Morant is he's essentially a De'Aaron Fox type without the shooting issues that Fox had or that Dennis Smith Jr. had or didn't have at the time but now has with Markelle Fultz or Lonzo Ball had. Basically everyone in that draft except for Frank Nikita had. But then you look at Fox has developed that pull-up shot. Fox has developed that mid-range floater, which he always had. Markelle Fultz lost those somehow and essentially dropped off the face of the earth as a player, even though he was still putting up triple-doubles and still defending well above his position. Lonzo Ball has become limited. He's a role player now, essentially, because he can't actually be the lead shooter and the lead pick-and-roll offense orchestrator without that shot. And now you're talking about all these players that just are never going to reach their potential because of this. And I think this is the same thing with both Simmons and Giannis. It's just they're much, much better players below their potential than any of these other guys are.
Right. I think that's a good point. And also I heard an interesting stat today. I think it was probably a Ringer stat that it was since like 85 or something like that, no team has had their best player be under 27. And win a championship, and that's kind of an amazing stat when you consider Giannis is only 24. Even Steph Curry didn't win his first championship till he was 27, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure both of the last two players to do that were Magic Johnson in different years.
Yeah, that's probably true. And it's interesting. I guess Duncan probably would have been the other one, but he had David Robinson too. So I don't know.
Right, you could argue that he wasn't the best player on that team.
Right, but I mean, and that really pounds home the point. I think there's people have kind of been divided into two camps, and I'm kind of in both. And that's one that Giannis needs that shot to really make the Bucks a contender, and then another one that's blaming Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton and et cetera, and saying, oh, this team that was actually having this amazing supporting cast the whole year, and obviously Budenholzer for only playing Giannis 38 minutes a game, which is a separate but also very valid issue.
Right, especially when you think about his conditioning versus Nikola Jokic's conditioning.
Right, or anybody. He's a 24-year-old literal freak. I mean, it's ridiculous that he wasn't playing at least 45 minutes a game when they needed him. Or Kawhi, yeah, who's been playing injured for, you know, however long. But yeah, I think it's probably a mixture of both. I think Giannis does need that shot. I think that I'd be interested here. I mean, do you think the Bucks going into this offseason before we get to the Raptors, it seems like they're likely to bring everyone back. They're Milwaukee. They don't really have another choice. I think they have to pay Middleton. They obviously have to keep the Bledsoe still under contract. I think they're still on the books for Hill for another year.
Hill is a $20 million opt-out for a $2 million buyout, so they're probably going to do that and resign it cheaper. The issues for them really are Brook Lopez is going to be on a minimum and is going to get contracts in the 18 million range offered to him. They really have Chris Middleton need the max. It's that simple. Chris Middleton's worth the max. And now all of a sudden Malcolm Brogdon's a guy you're talking about making 15 million a year as an elite backup point guard. So how do they bring all of those guys back? You're talking about a luxury tax bill that's going to go up $40 million for the same team.
Right.
And so that's the choice they have to make. And they should do it, I think, because
I don't think they have a choice. I mean, there's a real chance that Kawhi's not in Toronto next year, which is a discussion I don't really care about whatsoever, but there's a real chance he's not.
Right, that's a conversation for 2 weeks from now, not for now. He's in the fucking finals.
The Sixers, I will never trust. It seems like the Celtics may, I think is what they should do, go back to kind of building around Tatum and Brown, which means they probably won't be finals relevant, at least for a few more years. even if the Knicks were to get KD, I don't think that they're, and even if they got Kyrie, I don't think that would make them a contender. So the Bucks are still, if they're able to bring these guys back, and obviously we've seen other teams run it back plenty of times, I think you're right, the issue is that they won't be able to bring back Lopez, most likely, unless he takes a massive discount, which there's no real reason for him to at his age and the offers he's going to get.
Especially when you talk about all these young teams that are probably not going to get a superstar if they're out hunting. The ones that really stick out to me are the Jazz and the Kings and the Nets. All three, I don't really see them getting a player that's really worth the max contract. The Nets are in all these rumors, but they're the fourth team in all these rumors, and the Jazz and Kings simply, and the Pacers too, simply aren't in any of them. And all of those teams could do with Brook Lopez as either a four or a five that does nothing but space the floor, post up when need be, and block shots.
Right, and I don't think there's no reason for the Bucks to overreact. They got beat by a team. I think people, I think most people, probably rightly so, saw them as their past selves, even after, because they were down 1-0 to the Magic, they were down 2-1 to the Sixers, they were down 2-0 to the Bucks, they were down at least one game in every series. They never looked amazing until this last few games. It took Fred VanVleet hitting 90% of his threes in the last three games to maybe get them there. They were still down 15 in game six at one point. Giannis has the scary thing about Giannis and is that he seems like, unlike Ben Simmons, he will develop a jump shot. It probably won't be next year, might not even be the year after that, but he's only 24, so if he is willing to stay around Milwaukee, there's no reason not to be patient with that.
And the other thing I have on this is, it's just the lesson of this playoffs really to me has been that there is only one player in the last 10 years who has been unschemable for a team, and it was LeBron James. And in this playoffs, we've seen time and time again players who absolutely destroy one series. The next series, they get put in a box and they really aren't really able to contribute, and they have to find other ways to help other people contribute. This obviously was most obvious with Lillard, who was unreal in the OKC series and then found himself basically locked up being blitzed on every single pick and roll when he was playing the Warriors. And then you also saw this with Giannis, and you also saw this pretty hilariously with Nikola Jokic in the first five games versus the last two games of that Nuggets-Blazers series. And it's something where if we're in a situation where your number one player can't get schemed out, you can have these other guys produce for most of these games, and Giannis isn't really going to function off ball in these games, but you still need him on the floor, then is this a situation where you need to maybe consider signing, trading a Chris Middleton for somebody who's maybe more like a Jimmy Butler, more of an isolation scorer? But yeah, at the same time, I mean, this is what the Sixers did. The Sixers brought in two elite isolation scorers who can also play off ball, who theoretically made a perfect team, and yet lost in seven to the
Raptors. Right. Well, I mean, it's so hard to build a successful playoff team. You either have to have someone like LeBron or Kawhi, who I think, once we get to the Raptors, I think there's a whole discussion to be had about Kawhi all of a sudden, as, you know, a top three. I mean, I think there's no doubt now he's the top three playoff player of the decade, in terms of his results and how he plays.
He is precisely third, but he is definitely no higher than third and no lower than third.
Yeah, and or, you know, path B is be the Warriors, or path C is have, you know, I think the Rockets kind of show what path C could look like, and they haven't made it work yet, which is having a superstar and a lot of good role players, and they haven't really made it. The only two teams that have been able to make it are the Warriors and LeBron James.
And you look at the way the Thunder are kind of built in the same way the Rockets are, where you have a superstar and you have another very, very good role player, essentially, who can attack in isolation and produce at an all-star level. But the problem is the superstar on the Thunder was bad this year, and the secondary star on the Rockets was bad in the playoffs. And if those guys aren't producing and you mitigate them to the point where they're essentially role players, where all Westbrook was doing was initiating the offense, and all that Chris Paul was doing was shooting spot ups and being a somehow still plus defender for his size and age, then you're talking about a situation where that team construction doesn't really operate. And that's, in theory, that's the Blazers construction, right? Lillard being the superstar, McCollum being the other off-ball star, and then the elite role players being basically any of the eight guys whose names people learned in this playoffs. And yet what we saw was, when CJ McCollum was put in a situation where he had to produce, he did, but it still wasn't enough to not get swept by the Warriors. It was just enough to be in all four games.
Yeah. I mean, and again, that's another reason to kind of, I don't think anyone thought necessarily that the Kawhi trade was bad for the Raptors. I think most people were in support of it just because
because we knew how the story went otherwise.
So, yeah, they didn't really have any other options. But in terms of relitigating, you know, there's all these teams that maybe they should have traded something for him. Like, looking back, if you're the Sixers and you decide you're all in, they wouldn't even trade if this was, you know, what was reported. They had the Saric and the Covingtons and the Fultzes, and they wouldn't trade that for Kawhi with some picks. And that right now,
all assets that went out the door anyway.
Right now, first, yeah, exactly. They got desperate and did that later. But how, looking back on it, that's a kind of a colossal mistake on their part, because you got to think that Kawhi, Embiid, Landry Shamet, JJ Redick, and, you know, Jimmy Butler, for that matter, is probably a finals team in the East.
Yeah. I mean, I thought this was a finals team in the East, though, to be fair, and look what happened. I got to say, the team that really, I think, could have traded for Kawhi and done something that made a little bit more noise was the Thunder. I think the Thunder could have packaged Steven Adams and something else, probably two unprotected picks, given the potential for collapse this team has right now. Especially, really, any team that traded unprotected picks after Kawhi's deal was up, I think, would have been valuable at the time, because we all assumed he was leaving. Yeah. But if you talk about a team of Westbrook, even as poorly as Westbrook played this year, George, even as poorly as he played in the playoffs this year, and Leonard, that's a real team right there. And Nerlens Noel as your minimum role player at center, and any single one of their four mediocre wings at shooting guard, that's a real lineup that can contend for a championship.
Right.
Instead, last year they tried to take that step, and they got closer, but closer was just enough to keep them in the same position because the West improved so much. If I were a team that was maybe a little bit older than the 76ers or the Kings or the Jazz right now, maybe it's more like the Pacers, and there was that opportunity now with Anthony Davis that's essentially the same as what George was 2 years ago, what Kawhi was last year, I would be thinking, how can I get Anthony Davis on the Pacers, and how can I convince him to stay? Because you got to assume if you have some sort of package that starts with Thaddeus Young and all of their young players, essentially, Sabonis and Turner and probably Holiday, even though he's more of a role player. Those four and a couple picks have to be a start for Davis.
Right.
I think there's probably something where you're talking about maybe even enough. And then you extend Bojan Bogdanović, and you're talking about a lineup of Bogdanović, Oladipo is the true point guard, Collison playing off ball, and Davis. And that should be enough to be top two in the East, right?
Yeah, I mean, the East is so hard because I think we did see that Milwaukee right now is a regular season team until Giannis figures out how to take over a game, which he's still in the playoffs, which he still can do. And you can't do if you don't have a jump shot. It's just that simple, no matter how crazy athletic, unless maybe you're Shaq or something like that. But even yeah. Shaq, maybe in this era, we don't know if he'd be able to do what he did back when he was in his prime.
Yeah, really certainly, do need that. If you're not going to have a jump shot, you need to be an off-ball big man. And right. You need to have only one of those five players in your lineup.
Right, and similarly, we can use this transition to the West Finals. You can't really have a small point guard be that guy either, because no matter how good they are, if you don't have a guy who can take the shots, you can be schemed out of it, and that's a real issue.
Right, the biggest issue the Blazers had in that series, other than essentially luck not going their way, because they could have easily won all four of those games, the biggest issue they really had was the fact that C.J. McCollum is 6 feet tall and Klay Thompson is 6'8".
Right, and Iguodala and Draymond Green. It's hard to analyze teams' failures against the Warriors because they have Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala trapping instead of, you know, any your given, you know, wing defender, 3-and-D guy.
Right.
And yes,
when we talk about all these construction archetypes, what we fail to mention is that the Warriors are not like any of them.
Right, exactly. And we can talk about the Warriors in a second, but as far as, you know, when you don't have guys who can hit corner threes, and I think Kevin O'Connor wrote a really interesting article about the Al-Farouq Aminus of the world, and I think he talked about Pascal Siakam, and this was around the early stages of the Milwaukee-Toronto series when it looked like that was going south for them. If you can't hit that corner three in the playoffs, your team is going to really, really suffer for it, even if you do have an incredible top five player like a Giannis or a Kawhi or a Lillard or anybody like that who can take over the games in other ways. If you don't give them outlets, eventually they're going to be able to be schemed out of it. And
Which is why Harrison Barnes is going to make $20 million this offseason, even though nobody thinks Harrison Barnes is a good basketball player.
Right, and
he defends his position and he hits corner threes.
We go into after we talk about the playoffs for a second, we'll go into a little bit of offseason talk perhaps, but It's why I've kind of officially lost, and I'm an Alfredo Camino fan, but it's why I've lost my stock of him after seeing this Blazers fun run. It was a fun run, but really he wasn't playable, and that's one of the things that when you have a good defensive team and you get to a certain point, you can't really afford to have a guy like that on the court.
Yeah, Evan Turner's mid-range threat was more useful for stretching the floor than Alfredo Camino's corner three.
Yeah, I mean, at some point,
famously does their corner
right, three. Right, and at some point, more ball handling is more valuable than shooting if you're being trapped and you don't have any viable shooters.
Right, which is what we saw when they were blitzing Willard, and you had that lineup with Hood and with Turner on the court, and it was actually really producing.
Yeah, and obviously the sweep was very unflattering to the Blazers. They blew 3 18-point leads, which is absurd even for the Warriors. There's games 2 and 4 they should have won. They had 10-point leads in the final 4 minutes of both of those. And there's a whole other host of issues. Don't want to talk about that too much. But I think the bigger issue, and this is also something I don't really care to litigate all that much, but the Warriors with Curry versus Warriors with Durant and Curry, I think it's safe to say that they're certainly not better or worse one way or the other, but they're very different and people prefer them in a certain way. And if they somehow go ahead and win in 4 or 5 against the Raptors, I think that, or let's just say, does that damage Durant at all in terms of his past accomplishments?
Yes. It's already damaged. His rings were already near worthless, but if they win a ring without him, they're worth nothing. It's the point where the fact that he has those rings is going to be worse than having no rings at all. Nobody disrespects what John Stockton did, in part because John Stockton never did what Karl Malone did and failed to get a free ring. And I think if he goes down and goes to another team like the Knicks and he gets some more conference finals, even more finals, and he loses again, and the only two, or in this case, where it will be his three, even though he doesn't play, trophies he has are for the Warriors on a team where he was clearly the second best player and genuinely unnecessary, I don't think anybody would respect these 4 years of his legacy.
See, I have a slightly different take on it. I think that, yes, he should be criticized for everything that he's going to the Warriors, to a team that was already very good. But I think he's still the best player in the league right now.
I think that's an overstatement, but I think he's top 5, yes.
I think if I could build one guy that's around a playoff team right now, and I had to start my playoff team, it would probably be Kawhi right now, number 1, and then him, number 2. And I think the Warriors what people have been talking about more is how him not being there frees up Curry. I think it actually frees up Draymond more, which then in turn frees up everybody. And watching that Blazers series, Curry was amazing. He obviously averaged 36 points a game. But the reason why they won that series was Draymond, almost entirely.
Because they're going back to playing for Draymond as a primary ball handler, right. And he's also quarterback of the defense.
I mean, it's one of those things where you really realize how unique he is, and I think we've fallen into this trap of trying to, there's people that are like, oh, is this guy the next Draymond in the draft? Well, no, he's not, because Draymond is somehow 5 steps ahead of everybody. The fact that an athletic 6'8 guy can block pretty much anyone at the rim is really kind of a crazy, and I thought this against the Blazers, you know, it's kind of an amazing feat when you just see him, he's always 5 steps ahead of the next guy.
Yeah, he's an 8 assists per game guy in the playoffs when he's in that role, which is insane, because you talk about when he was drafted, the famous comparison, Jordan Bell was the next Draymond Green. Jordan Bell is only the next Draymond Green because he could defend 5 through 3. That's the only thing they have in common. He can't do any of the passing, he can't do any of the rim protection, and most importantly, he really, really can't do the switching 1 through 5. So that skill of being able to guard both wings and bigs is coveted, but PJ Tucker can guard both wings and bigs, but all he brings to the offense is corner threes. Draymond Green guards wings and bigs, blocks shots at the rim, and then on the other side, even when he's not trapping with Iguodala, you're talking about a situation where instead of just shooting those terrible corner threes where he looks like he's wearing a backpack, he's making shots, a lot of the time through moving screens and very illegal DHOs, but he's making shots for Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and nothing.
Right. Okay, well, moving on to the finals. What is this series going to look like? It seems likely that Durant won't play. I'm not sure how much that matters, but it could if it becomes a close series. I don't think this is actually going to be all that close a series, but, you know, it might be.
My biggest issue is I think Durant, for as good as he is, when he comes back, he's planned for. On the other hand, Cousins, nobody cares about for his plan for at all, and Cousins is the literal best one-on-one scorer among centers in the entire NBA. And if he comes up in game three and the Warriors are down 2-0, and they come into a position where they're back at home and their offense still isn't really operating against Kawhi Leonard and Pascal Siakam, as good as Marc Gasol is at defending a one-on-one scoring center, he's still a guy who can get 50 whenever a team wants to get a 50 with four floor spaces around them. So what if they just completely radically shift their offense to go to that, and they completely negate the advantage that the... Because really the main advantage the Raptors have over any other team playing the Warriors is that they have elite perimeter defenders at 2, 3, and 4, all of whom can shoot, and one of whom is one of the best players in the league. So that's obviously going to be a good thing, whether or not Kevin Durant's there. But once you introduce Cousins, I think that's more of an X factor.
Well, it would be
but
funny
again,
if Cousins decided
the
a series.
Warriors win the series, no problems.
Yeah. As far as matchups go, I think the issue. I mean, Kyle Lowry's been very, very good this whole playoffs, which has been interesting. He's kind of completely changed the way he's played since Kawhi's arrived, which is also very interesting. He's not really – he's so big, and he defends bigger guards so well. I don't know if he'll be so – I don't think he can stay in front of Curry. No one really can, but what are the chances if Durant's not there, Kawhi plays Curry at all on defense?
Probably only situationally. I mean, if they get that switch, they're not going to run out of it. But I think most of the time Lowry's going to be on him. And if they have somebody tracking him off ball specifically, it's going to be Danny Green, because Lowry has no problem with the size of Klay Thompson, which is the issue everyone else has.
Well, I mean, this is the bizarre thing about the Raptors, too. They have their entire starting five are really incredible defenders. I mean, Danny Green's made all defensive first team. Obviously, Marc Gasol has been defensive player of the year. Siakam is supposedly heir apparent to Kawhi. Even when you bring Ibaka in, you have him. All these guys, Fred VanVleet's a very good defender, although he gives up a little height. Like, they don't really have a bad on-ball or team defender on their roster, which is
right. Fascinating. Even Norm Powell, who should always be the last guy coming off the bench in the playoffs, does something.
And
that's really the biggest strength, because the Warriors have not faced an elite defensive team in any playoffs to this point, except for the Rockets last year. This year, the Rockets were not that. Last year, the Rockets were. And that is the only time they've had problems with Durant on their roster. So I think that could be important. I think it's also important to note that when Kawhi was still better than he is now in the regular season, but probably not as much of a playoff participator, 2 years ago in that half game he played for the Spurs were up by 20. He goes down after being intentionally injured by Zaza Pachulia, and it's a 40-point swing. So do they really not know how to scheme against Leonard offensively and how to deal with his disruption on defense? Because if that's the case, that's going to be a huge problem.
Yeah. Predictions
still,
for the
I
finals.
Think that's the most compelling case you can make, though, for them actually winning the series is that half of the game.
Right. Kawhi just going crazy. Predictions.
Raptors in six, specifically Raptors winning one, losing two and three, winning 4-5-6.
Yeah, I think if the Raptors win, I think they'll have to start. I mean, well, this hasn't been proven through the playoffs, but you'd think they would have to win both their first two games.
Certainly they'd have to win at least two games at home.
Right. They'll definitely have to win two games at home. I think they
three
have
games,
to.
Sorry, I forgot they were home court. Yeah.
Right, which is interesting because I keep thinking whenever I hear this, I'm like, oh, if Raptors win six, that means they'll be able to close out at home. But actually, Raptors in seven would be the home closeout. It's hard for me to see the Warriors losing in game seven. So I agree with you. I think if the Raptors are to win, even if it's on the road, it's, it would have to be a game six. I'm still going to go Warriors in six. They just are too good at some point. And it's really the way Draymond has been playing more than anything that makes me think that. Klay hasn't even been that good. He'll have a game where he hits everything. I don't see the Raptors being able to win a series, but I think it'll be more competitive and more fun than people will give them credit for.
I think we can all agree that at the very least this is going to be better than any Western Conference series for the Warriors.
Right, and watching Giannis play in that Raptors series, I'm very grateful, actually, and I think most people thought Giannis and the Bucks would be the ideal matchup for the Warriors just because of their style, but I think playoff-wise, that might not have worked out quite as well as people thought. I think we're seeing.
Yeah, you could very easily see them building a wall around Giannis with Iguodala and Green essentially fully dedicated to him. And you could very easily see him panicking, throwing a lot of terrible passes, attempting a lot of shots he really shouldn't, attempting to do that thing where he heroes like he's in transition, but he's only two steps away from the rim and gets himself a bad layup.
Yeah.
It's just, it would have been a fun series to see hypothetically, and I'm sure we'll get it at some point, but I think the Raptors have a better chance of winning, and I am more interested in seeing the Raptors series than I was in seeing the Bucks series personally.
Yeah, I think the path for the Raptors is Gasol's able to stay on the floor, which I think is a real concern because he's gotten a lot slower for him. And what really stood out, one of the other things that stood out to me is actually how mobile and good Kevon Looney is and good for that system.
How good he was at rebounding in that Blazers series.
Yeah, I mean, the Blazers couldn't rebound and save their lives, to be fair, which is really interesting because they dominated in the first three rounds. But I think the path is Danny Green, Marc Gasol staying on the floor, Danny Green being much better. I think he's going to have to hit shots, which he didn't really do in the last few games. He's really hit a cold streak.
We saw the first quarter of game six, he essentially missed four wide open corner threes in the first quarter.
Right. And then Iguodala is not fully healthy, so if he can't play, that all of a sudden becomes a big deal.
I still think there's a real chance that the Raptors just dominate the series, but it's not likely. It's much more likely the Warriors just dominate it, but in a close series, I still think Raptors in six. But I feel we'll know much more after game one.
I think at the end of the day, it's if Draymond Green has a series where it's like a Draymond Green series and he just takes Kawhi completely out offensively for half the series, then that'll be an interesting series. But there's other options. Of course, Kawhi just keeps playing how he's been playing and the Raptors win in six or seven.
Yeah, and remember, going into the last series, we're talking about Kawhi matching up on Middleton and Pascal Siakam matching up on Antetokounmpo, because position to position it made sense. But then when the series came down to it, at the end of the day, they put their best defender on the best player, and that's what worked. So right now we're talking about a situation where Kawhi is maybe playing off Iguodala, Klay Thompson, and then switching on to Steph, but maybe they get to a point where they just say, we have the best one-on-one defender in the league, he should be chasing Steph around, and that changes everything.
Right. Well, that concludes our playoff preview, playoff recap / preview. We'll be back in just a second with some maybe summer preview and maybe a little bit of recap on the draft lottery. All right, welcome back to West Coast Bias. We're going to be talking a little more about the NBA, specifically looking forward to some summer forecasts. Not going to be doing too much about the draft. Like I said, we're going to be going over that mock drafts and some more obscure prospects in a few weeks. But we will be talking about some of the teams that we've just been talking about in the playoffs, as well as the Blazers and the Kings a little bit. Who is in the best position out of the teams that had bad finishes to the year?
Who's in the best position, or who is going to be treated as if they're in the best position? Because there's different things.
Who's going to come out of the summer out of the Rockets, Sixers, Celtics, and Thunder, maybe, looking the best?
Well, I think, realistically, of those four teams, I think the team that'll be the best next year is going to be the Celtics because they have so much talent. But they're not in a great position because they're in a place where both their starting and backup point guards are hilariously ball-dominant guys that don't fit their culture at all. And people are finally realizing this after Kawhi had one bad series. And now they're talking about them maybe potentially not even bringing Kawhi back, which is questionable, to say the least.
Kyrie.
I still think it's Kawhi Leonard. Kyrie Irving. You know, people whose name starts with K. Kemba Walker. Kristaps Porzingis. No, Kyrie Irving doesn't really fit their system, but he had an excellent regular season. He's still an all-star type, first-team all-NBA type player, and I see no reason for them not to bring him back. Of course, the question is if he wants to come back. So whether or not that really works out for them is really up to Kyrie, and then after that, it's up to Danny Ainge. But the team that's in a good situation that might actually work out for them is the Sixers, because the Sixers now have the opportunity to choose between signing either of those small forwards or both or neither and having the cap space, and suddenly they have some sort of flexibility before they lock themselves into maybe going all in for 2 years. I think the most likely situation is they sign both of those guys to maxes and then trade one of them, by one of them I mean Tobias Harris, sometime around halfway through next season, so they don't have to pay the luxury tax on him when they sign Ben Simmons to his max, or maybe potentially Ben Simmons signs that qualifying offer that we've heard all these things about, tries to leave in free agency. if he does that, then we're in a situation where actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard with the Sixers because I think that what the playoffs really showed is that Jimmy Butler might actually, you know, for all of his issues, when you're getting into the playoffs, you want Jimmy Butler, and Tobias Harris is really not a guy who you can trust because Tobias Harris did next to nothing. And I've long been a Tobias Harris fan, but again, the playoffs really showed that Jimmy Butler is probably the guy you want if you're going to be making playoff runs. So I think it went from everyone kind of thinking they'd pick Harris over Butler because he's younger, less of a headache, et cetera, to now probably being the reverse. And that seems like Butler, if they are just going to pick one of them, it seems like Butler would be that one.
Yeah, I think we're also well past the point where we're talking about Jimmy Butler as somebody who's maybe better than Kawhi Leonard, by the way.
Right.
So recent conversation, I think we're done with that one.
I'm sure if that ever should have been a conversation.
Yeah, I would really say that they're in an interesting position just because they have so many things that could be moving pieces, especially if we're talking about Ben Simmons maybe leaving and taking that qualifying offer, then they're going to have another year not having to worry about the heavy luxury tax they'd be taking. J.J. Redick, still, he's technically a free agent, right? He signed two consecutive one-year deals, so he'll be on his third, probably $17 million one-year deal there. So J.J. Redick is a guy that they could actually keep around without having to worry about the luxury tax. They got a lot. They got a lot of things that could still happen moving parts wise. Only problem is their assets are depleted now and they really have to make some decisions. They're in a very interesting place as a team that's so young and already all in. What's much more interesting to me though is that Oklahoma City is so old and all in, and the Rockets are so old and all in, and now both of them are trying to make trades around their two best players, trying to make things work. The Rockets even gotten to the point where they're now trying to make trades around their one best player and put the Pelicans all are available. Problem, of course, being that Chris Paul is untradeable with that contract, which is, of course, also the problem that OKC has with Russell Westbrook. There's no way they're going to trade him. There's just no chance. He's worth more there than he is anywhere else. So you're building around Westbrook and George, and you're probably, at this point, considering Adams as the guy you move, and you're considering Roberson as the guy you move, and you're probably considering those other younger wings that are filling those roles, your Terrence Ferguson's, your... I honestly could not tell you if it's Jaren or Jeremy Grant, but whichever Grant brother they have. And then you're talking about maybe Nerlens Noel is the third key centerpiece there because he outplayed Steven Adams for most of the year and will probably be able to extend at about a $6 million to $8 million range a year for 4 years. Or if he's smart, maybe just takes another minimum there.
Yeah, well, real fast, so, circle back to the Sixers real fast. Just on it's Sixers, I think being a Sixers fan would be the most roller coastery of all the fandoms. On paper, they have so much talent. They're so young in some ways. Their two best players ostensibly are still so young. Whether Ben Simmons ever becomes anything, we'll see. But Embiid's obviously awesome. But then once you get to that lower level, yes, Embiid's only 25, but he's not really able to stay healthy. And he also hasn't really shown an interest in keeping himself in shape, which is always a problem. Simmons, obviously, I'm not going to talk about his problems. They're been well documented. J.J. Redick got played out of the playoffs, which was interesting. He was really bad in that Milwaukee series, or not Milwaukee, Toronto series. So they do have a lot of interesting decisions to make, and it's funny because they're all kind of big decisions. There's not really any small decisions that they can make until they make the Butler, Harris, Redick decisions, which is just, it's just very interesting to be them. They could either, I mean, they're going to be a good team no matter what, but I'm not sure how much better they're going to be.
Right, and you're talking about a team that's really at the core, first and foremost, built around Embiid, then around Simmons, then around the other 2 weeks, then around all these other guys. And that divide is kind of, are we going to get to a point where they can start trading Simmons? Are we going to get to a point where they realize they don't work together on court at all and force Simmons to completely change the way he plays? Or are we going to just kind of get a stasis and have them try to make another go at it and see if eventually it'll all work together?
Yeah, I mean, I think best case scenario, Simmons shows a little more interest in basketball. Embiid stays healthy. They hold on to Butler. I don't think Harris has really a role there. I don't think his skill set's very well utilized there. It was a bad trade when they did it. It was a bad trade now. Ideally, they could find someone like Covington to come back, because that's really who they need, is a guy who can hit that three and play really good defense and play a lot of minutes and guard the other team's best player. And then a couple shooters off the bench, such as Landry Shamet, So really, if they had just had the team before the Harris trade, I think they'd be in much better position, but they're not. They didn't.
All right, so here's a flip question for you. What teams are in the worst position?
In terms of playoff teams?
Non-playoff teams. Or low-tier playoff teams, which is to say that I don't consider two of the eight teams in the East playoff teams.
Okay, well, I want to start with the Rockets real fast, just because I think they are kind of screwed.
Certainly stuck.
I think that the advantage they have that none of the other teams have is that they have Daryl Morey and they have that whole system, which is going to make it so they're never actually bad. And obviously they have James Harden. But I can't think of a team in the entire league I'd rather be less in terms of the personnel they have, and the way they have to kind of run it. They don't really have another choice in order to stay competitive with the Warriors than to do what they set out to do today, which is essentially try their hardest to get rid of Chris Paul. I'm not entirely on board with the idea that they're trying to actively shop Clint Capella, who's on a really friendly deal. He hasn't been very good in the playoffs, which I get, but the total analytics thing with Morey and just seeing that Capella is all of a sudden useless, I'm not sure if I totally buy that either. But I just don't really know where they go next to get over that hump without Chris Paul.
The problem is they really need somebody who can be a secondary isolation scorer, or at the very least be a secondary shot creator for himself. Because right now their second best player only works because their best player is James Harden, can make him work in the pick and roll, which would be great if he was the fourth or fifth best player, but you're in a situation where Chris Paul's deteriorating, PJ Tucker's being relied on more, and all of a sudden they're basically playing lineups with 3-point guards, one shooting guard slash power forward, because he's really both, but he's never ever been a small forward, and Capella, and it's just, that's what they have to do to compete with the Warriors, and it's all out of sorts and all out of shape and very strange and just not quite really balanced.
Right.
So they have to change something, or they have to really, really hope that Chris Paul de-ages himself 2 years in this offseason.
Well, they're in this really unique situation where they're heavily reliant on Chris Paul, but also completely hamstrung by his contract. I can't think of that many off the top of my head where there's been players like that, where they kind of need to be around for success to occur, but also they really don't want him there.
I think the Thunder are in exactly that situation.
That's true. But I think Chris Paul with the Rockets is, I think if you had to pick between Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook in the playoff series, you're going to pick Chris Paul every time, even at his age. It's tough. It's tough for them. But yes, I agree. The Thunder are in a very similar situation, except I'm sure, still not sure Paul George is the guy in the playoffs, and I'm definitely not sure Russell Westbrook is. So,
just one thing to say about I'm not sure who's in a worse situation personnel-wise, cap sheet-wise, and it's you see the Washington Wizards.
Right now I think it's between the Wizards and the Hornets, who I think are in the absolute worst situation out of anybody.
The Hornets aren't there yet. They just will be the day they sign that
They will be. And it's one of those things where they don't have an option. They kind of have to.
Right. They have no other choice, because it's either you go to the bottom and let your best ever franchise player go, if we count them as franchise expansion, or you try to stay around the middle and try to get the 8th seed with a guy making $50 million a year to be essentially the 11th best point guard in the league.
It seems like a lot of people think they absolutely need to hold on to Kemba no matter what. I don't think they should. I get it. Nope. He's like their big guy, and he likes Charlotte for all intents and purposes, blah, 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 blah. But why would you sign a guy who you've had in this situation now for the last 6 or 7 years with all the other minimal talent?
Who's the second best player on that team?
I think I've heard this discussion happen many times. I think it's, when healthy, it's probably Nick Batum. next year it could be Miles Bridges or Jeremy Lamb.
Did you know that Miles Bridges finished 13th in all rookie voting?
Yeah, well, at least he was honest about it, though. Someone was like saying he should be embarrassed, and he's like, no, that was horrible. So kudos to him on that. I'd say the two teams, now that the Grizzlies seem to have a pretty bright future after their draft lottery luck, combined with Jaren Jackson, all that stuff, and the Magic, who we don't know where we are on them, but, you know, they look like they have a competent coach and roster. So
If you told me 2 years ago that in the last two drafts, the Hornets got Miles Bridges and a player that I genuinely thought was the second best point guard in that draft, who is now apparently a scoring shooting guard, I would have said, wow, they're going to be really good. It turns out one of them is a horrifying bust who basically didn't play as a rookie, and the other, his claim to fame was that he was pretty good in a dunk contest.
Yeah.
It's worrying.
Yeah, it's not great.
Have a team that's in the West but would be in the same boat in the East that I think is in a worse case than any of them, even though they have a better player than any of these other teams. Well, Blake Griffin's probably better, but the Minnesota Timberwolves have Karl-Anthony Towns, and then after Karl-Anthony Towns, they have so much commitment to so many absolute catastrophes.
This is true.
The one that stands out to me is obviously Andrew Wiggins, who's getting paid $33 million in 2023, but don't let that distract you from the fact that next year they're giving Jeff Teague $20 million and Gorgui Dieng $17 million. Neither of those players are good anymore, and they're both getting paid about two times what an average free agent above replacement level is making. Todd Gibson is a free agent now, so it's not a concern, but do you know how much money Todd Gibson made last year?
It was 17 or something like that?
It was 14, but still, it was more than average for Todd Gibson, who is the most fifth starter any person has ever been. Then you're talking about Robert Covington, who they had on a great deal. They had until 2022 at $12 million. It's just well below market what Robert Covington is. And then, obviously, Dario Saric is still there for a year on a rookie deal and will have restricted free agency available to him. But after Karl-Anthony Towns, and after Robert Covington, and after Dario Saric, who, again, despite being their third best player, they did not start, the fourth best player on this team is either Andrew Wiggins, who was bad, Jeff Teague, who was bad, or, and this is the most worrying thing, Derrick Rose, who is bad every other year except for this year, and a free agent, and has no reason to stay there because his coach that he came for is gone.
And a self-proclaimed rapist. So
yep.
We're doing well on all fronts here. I'd say the Pistons.
Not smart.
I'd say the Pistons are the other team I'd throw into that.
Pistons have Blake Griffin, and at the very least, if they can get a point guard that's not Reggie Jackson, I think they could be a fifth or sixth seed in the East on a year where they can maybe catch a Pacers or something. But yeah, the Hornets and the Timberwolves, I think, are the two obvious choices.
Yeah. One of the really interesting topics that's been thrown around right now is with Bradley Beal, who somehow is still only 25, which is bizarre.
Bradley Beal, 2 years younger than Buddy Hield.
Yes, crazy stuff. Mainly in the context of delusional Lakers fans making horrible trades that involve Lonzo Ball in the fourth pick and then somehow thinking that's too much for Bradley Beal. And
I saw Lakers fans today rejecting Kyle Kuzma, fourth pick, and Josh Hart for Bradley Beal.
Yeah, it's nonsense. They're just the absolute worst. But from a Wizards perspective, obviously there's no real reason to deal him except unless you can trade him as a package with John Wall, which obviously no one's doing.
I mean, Lakers might have John Wall on the roster, which is the biggest problem they have.
But I feel bad for the guy, and he got screwed with his All-NBA vote as well, which is just, as a sidebar, ludicrous that random sports writers get to determine millions of dollars going to players. But yeah, that's a weird one. Obviously, we have the whole Anthony Davis situation, which has now been reinvented with the Zion issue. There's another one. Obviously, there's Kemba, who we don't know what he's going to do. It seems like he's probably going to go back to Charlotte. Kyrie is another one. There's just so many good point guards out there. It should be interesting.
Right. And you look at the last three drafts, counting this one, half of the great players to come into the league are either point guards or nominal point guards. You're talking about Donovan Mitchell and Ben Simmons, not listed point guards, but they are. Luka Doncic didn't come in as a listed point guard, but is now. De'Aaron Fox obviously did come in as a point guard, and now you're talking about John Morant's going to come as a point guard. Those are five of maybe nine total all-star or near all-star contributors from the last three classes who all played this position that was already the most glutted up position in the league. And now you're also talking about a guy like Zion Williamson, whose role essentially on that team is going to be his league creator. So what's the value of a Kemba Walker anymore?
Yeah, exactly. All right, I think our last thing we can do is kind of give a summer preview. I'll eulogize the Blazers a little bit. As a fan of a team who had not been to the Western Conference Finals since 2000, when Rasheed Wallace and various other convicts slash drug addicts were on the team, it was a very, very satisfying year. Great to be a Blazer fan. Loved the just absolute mauling of the Thunder. That was fantastic. Obviously, that shot was like a top three moment of my entire life, everything I've ever done included. The quadruple overtime game, being up till 3:30 a.m. and watching Ronnie Hood just take over, that was a lot of fun. The multiple 18-point leads in the Warriors series were fun for a little while. The C.J. McCollum game was fun. Watching Damian Lillard just act like an adorable little kid after they won Game 7 in the tunnel was really fun. Having an underrated part was having Jody Allen, Paul Allen's sister, seem to actually take an interest, which is huge, which kind of culminated in both Olshay and Stotts getting extensions this year. Both good moves in my mind. The bizarre fact that Kings Blazers game on the last game of the season completely changed the course of the NBA playoffs in pretty much a completely inconceivable way, but one that all of a sudden makes a lot of sense.
I'm Zach still Collins mad that he's looking pretty good because you get 90 points in that game.
Right. But now, obviously, it's time for the summer. The Blazers have the 25th pick. Seems like they're unlikely to keep it. They also have a couple of really important roster decisions to make. The three players, or the four free agents, I believe, Curry, Cantor, Hood, and Aminu.
Essentially, all of the most important role players except for Turner during that series as well.
Right. Both Hood and Cantor have both said they really want to come back. Obviously, that's not the only one of them is really going to be able to come back. I love Cantor. I think he completely flipped his narrative. I think he loved being in Portland. I think everyone that ends up coming to Portland really loves it here, which is great. I think it's fun to root for a team where that's the case, where everyone loves the leader of the team and all that. But I'd much rather have Hood come back. He's still pretty young. He's exactly what they need. He wasn't consistent necessarily, but he's definitely a valuable piece that, you know, he's a 6'7 wing scorer who has long arms and can shoot. So even though Nurkic is still probably out till at least the new year, and Cantor would be a valuable piece, I'd still prioritize Hood if you can only have one. Obviously, Seth Curry's gone. He'll be a starter probably in Charlotte.
100%.
Aminu, it's hard to look back at him. I think we're still feeling the effects of the playoffs, but he's been obviously a very valuable piece for the Blazers in a long time because they have his bird rights. They can give him a really, really team-friendly deal and all that. So he'll probably be back, you'd have to think. I'd be fine with letting him go, but I don't know who else. It wouldn't really help their financial situation, so there's no real reason to have that happen. Zach Collins obviously had his moments. It seems like he'll certainly be starting, at least in Nurkic's place. He still needs to get bigger, but and a little smoother on his jump shot. But hopefully he takes that third-year leap.
What do you think about the Winklevoss twins lineup with him and Myers Leonard?
You know, as a huge Myers Leonard fan, that game four against the Warriors was just enormously satisfying. He's somebody that got a big contract in 2016, but it wasn't huge enough to make it completely disgusting in a lot of ways. If he was just a little smarter basketball player, what I found hilarious was there's a quote in, I think, game one of the Warriors series where the Warriors kept leaving Myers Leonard wide open, and he had a few and missed a few, and Mike Breen was like, oh, he can hit that shot, and everyone on Twitter was posting it like, ha ha ha, Myers Leonard is such a good shooter. The dude shoots like 42% on three-pointers. He can legitimately hit threes, and then he showed it in game four. If he was just a little smarter basketball player, he'd be really useful because he can shoot. He's completely jacked.
I don't understand how he looks so strong, but he isn't strong.
He's just so stupid. Sweetest guy. But yeah, I don't have any problem with Myers Leonard. I think it was fun. there's a real
Mike
chance.
Mike Trout would be a fan favorite if he was on a minimum contract, I would say.
I think he's still somehow a fan favorite, even though half the fans hate him.
Well, Evan Turner's kind of the same way. Two-thirds of Blazers fans hate Evan Turner, but the third that looks back
the problem,
at
the problem, the problem with Evan Turner is that Myers Leonard has never been good. Evan Turner was supposed to be actually good, so people judge him a little more.
That's fair.
Myers Leonard is also big and white, which is helpful when you're assigning fan favorites.
Especially in Portland.
But yeah, there's a real chance him and it's Myers Leonard and Zach Collins, who are the starting front court for the Blazers in November. It's a real thing that could happen. I'm hoping for a scowl renaissance this summer, personally, where he just gains a lot of muscle and does something cool.
I'm all in on Anthony Simons. He's a backup for Zach Collins because he does all the same things, but worse.
If they don't sign anybody else, I'm sure there'll be a classic Olshay bargain bin signing that ends up being a pretty good move. But
such as all four of the players we just mentioned.
Right. But as of now, it looks like it's Myers Leonard and Zach Collins who are going to be the front court. Which is interesting. I'm a big Anthony Simons guy. I think he's going to be really good.
Every Simons, you see him moving into more of what's currently the Evan Turner role next year.
What happened in the playoffs is that CJ McCollum kind of effectively ended the or at least temporarily ended the should we trade you for Aaron Gordon conversation or Blake Griffin or
yes.
Ben Simmons or all of the above. Because he's actually a legitimately good playoffs performer and he was much, much better than Lillard for probably two-thirds of the playoffs. It'll be interesting. I think Anthony Simons, like I've said before, is the hybrid of Lillard and McCollum. He's doesn't have probably quite the energy and leadership Lillard does, but he can shoot like Lillard, he can pass like Lillard, and has the floater and mid-range game McCollum does. So I hope he gets time. I hope Stotts gives him time. I think he'll have to because I don't think they're going to have a better player than him. But I think there's a real chance he does get time. It's going to be a fun year because Lillard's still only 29. He has three more years. They're going to be off. They're going to have a whole lot of expirings to trade in the upcoming window or the trade deadline for the winter. So they're going to be off the Turner deal. They're going to be off the Leonard deal, so they're gonna have all of a sudden next season they're gonna have space, and Lillard will be 30, but they'll still, and McCollum will be 28, but they'll have a hopefully much better Zach Collins. They'll have Simons, who knows what they'll have outside of that. So I'm just looking forward to seeing what they do, especially as some of these other teams start to probably lose a little bit of steam.
And Zach Collins doesn't come due for 2 years, right? So they'll be able to extend in that offseason without a cap space, but they won't have to. Right, okay. So my first thought on the Blazers is that their biggest issue is that they have all of these players who are excellent role players, excellent fit players, including Nurkic, who's hurt, obviously, but they are all either point guards or centers or wings, but wings that are really weird. They don't... Their best chance at spacing the floor is playing Collins as a true power forward, and playing somebody at a small forward that's more like Royce Harkless or even Jake Layman, who actually can shoot the ball. But then you're talking about players like Evan Turner that are better than players in the lineup who are not getting those opportunities because they can't shoot. You don't really need three ball handlers on the floor at one time. And I just don't see any way for them to change that balance, so they really have to double down on it.
No, I mean, they really badly need someone like Otto Porter or somebody like that, or anybody who can just, or Robert Covington, or someone who can just spot up in the corner and shoot. I think they're kind of stuck like this probably for another year, assuming they keep Aminu. But I think they showed this year that they're able to now win the playoffs, so they got that monkey off their back. I think that obviously the Warriors and the Nuggets are still prime threats. I think the Thunder are going downhill. I think the Rockets are going downhill. I think the Clippers are really good, but who knows what they're going to look like next year. I think the Jazz are very similar to the Blazers, that they're probably stuck in whatever Donovan Mitchell's ceiling is for the foreseeable future and not really having a second guy who could score. So I think the conference is really pretty wide open for the next few years into Lillard's early 30s. So I'm much more optimistic than I would have been just probably a month ago about this.
Right, because this is still a team that we were talking about three of the last 4 years as a team that might even get left out of the playoffs, and three of the last 4 years they've ended up in the top four.
To be fair, I was never talking like that.
Right. That's true.
And that wasn't even a homer pick. I truly couldn't understand why people were leaving them out of the playoffs. I thought they were at worst a sixth seed or something like that. Yeah. But that's besides the point. But yeah, it'll be fun.
Speaking of teams left out of the playoffs for 16 of the last 16 years, here's a great transition to the Sacramento Kings, who, for the first time in a very long time, have exactly that Otto Porter type of player that people are talking about every single team needing as we go into more and more into an era where there are 20 all-star point guards and 10 all-star centers and 5 all-star small forwards. And all of those small forwards now have to play 2, 3, and 4 because everybody else has size at those positions, so you need to match it. And we're left in a situation where everybody needs an Otto Porter, everybody needs a Robert Covington, everybody needs a Paul George, everybody needs a Jimmy Butler, whatever it is. The Kings actually have it. The only problem is not one person outside of Sacramento thinks they do, because Harrison Barnes has spent the last 2 years being terrible and being paid a max contract to be a 20-point-per-game scorer that nobody believes is good. But anybody who watched them in Sacramento this year saw a player that was spectacular as an off-ball defender, spectacular as an off-ball spot-up shooter, spectacular as a guy running as the fourth or fifth starter in an offense, and most importantly to me, still spectacular as an isolation scorer when the situation demanded it, but never forcing it. Yeah. He was, to me, exactly what the Clippers have, which maybe the points per game, we're talking about shift between 16 and 22 is pretty big, but exactly what the Clippers had with Tobias Harris. And now we're talking about probably he's going to opt into a $25 million extension to be a free agent next year. But if I were Sacramento, what I would do is try to extend him at $20 million for the next 4 years right now, when they still have cap space, still have money, and that way they would open up space for a max without having to trade away Yogi Ferrell or cut Yogi Ferrell or trade away a different player. Probably Nemanja Bjelica would be the one going out the door. He's on above market deal to get to a max position. And then you talk about really the choice between whichever you come to mutual agreement with Nikola Vucevic, Jimmy Butler, and Tobias Harris. And then if you have any of those three players playing, because they all fit next to Bagley, you have any of those three players playing next to Bagley, Hield, and Harris, Harrison, Barnes, I think that is a hell of a team. And I specifically think that you're talking about Harry Giles maybe developing 2 years to the point where he can replace one of them as a starter, and you move Barnes to the bench, and that is an even better team. But the only problem I have is, first of all, does anybody else believe in Harrison Barnes enough to commit to him?
Right. I've always been a Harrison Barnes guy. I think that's a good fit. I think Harris would fit really well into that team. I think that would be a really excellent, really fun shooting team. He works well in the kind of the fast pace, but if you had a lineup of Fox, Hield, Barnes, Harrison, Bagley, I guess, you might be a little small in the front court defensively, but it would be super fun to run, and they don't really need to be good for another year or two anyway, so I think it would be fun.
Yeah, in that situation, you're talking 6'3", 6'4", 6'8", 6'10, essentially. Nobody's above size for their position.
Right.
Fox is barely above size, but not enough for it to be noteworthy. He's just not a problem size-wise.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It would be fun. I think the Kings are going to be... I think there's a pretty reasonable chance they make the playoffs next year. Even if they don't. I mean, it really depends on a lot of different factors, including the Lakers and the Thunder and the Clippers and all that, but... I think it'll be fun. It's too bad there's no draft pick, but
do. Yes, for me, the big conversation, and I think this is really a big conversation on Kings Twitter, is obviously with Barnes, you're going to assume he's going to opt in for the $25 million because his market value is probably closer to around $16 right now, and Sacramento doesn't seem likely to be able to give him that big offer off of very little. So if you're going to have that situation, then you're going to be talking about having less than a max to build with, and you're probably going to have to cut both Farrell and Frank Mason, who's as good as gone because he's pretty terrible. And then you're not going to be able to add any other role players, and you have to commit a four-year max to one of these very much third-tier free agents, because you assume you're not getting an interview with KD, you assume you're not getting an interview with Kawhi, even though both those guys obviously are great fits. So you're competing with, really what you're competing with, you're competing with the Pacers, you're competing with the Jazz, and you're competing with the Nets for those players, because you assume the Clippers are going to get somebody better. You assume the Sixers are either going to keep their guys or get somebody better. And I think at this point, it's even a safe assumption the Knicks are in a conversation for these better players. So I think they have a better pitch for any of those three than those teams do. So your choice really is, assuming you have the choice between them, do you want Butler, who's the better defender of the three, but the worst off-ball player? Do you want Harris, who's the best off-ball, on-ball player and fit, essentially just exactly the same thing Harrison Barnes does? Or do you want Vucevic, who is an exceptionally slow center, but is very good at what he does from the elbow and is able to space the floor and fills a lot of the same roles Nemanja Bjelica did last year with a much higher ceiling?
See, do you want none of them? I definitely don't think you want Vucevic. Maybe if Capella is made available, see what you can get. See what you can put together for that. I don't know what you could do. That would be a fun fit. That would be entertaining.
You pretty much could use him for Cauley Stein, but the problem is Cauley Stein and Bagley didn't work together. There's no reason to believe Capella and Bagley would. I think once Bagley
develops a little more and a little more of an offensive player and can do a little more, I think he'd be a pretty good fit with Capella, actually. I mean, I the Cauley Stein thing didn't work, but I think put Bagley, who's a pretty good passer and a good scorer, next to a guy like Capella who's just rebounding and running, I think that could be a sixth run it back and that could work pretty well. But you never know until you try it, I guess. But I mean, I guess my final takeaway is it's fun to root for a team that is likable, has a good organization, and is winning currently.
Or the players are happy to be there, too.
Right.
That's fun.
I'm grateful for a team that...
new for me.
Right, exactly. And now that you have a actual team for the first time in 10 years or whatever, I feel that, too. It's always better to be a team, and this is why I've never been a fan of the whole trade McCollum idea. It's always better to be a team that's winning. And obviously I can say this more so now that the Blazers are in the conference finals, where if they got out in the first round again, I might be singing a different tune, but I think it's always more fun to be a team that wins 50 games than a team that wins 24 games and then wins, you know, 60 games in 15 years when I don't care as much. So that's kind of my takeaway from this season.
I think an unexpected Western Conference finals berth is better than an expected finals berth, personally.
Right. Or, you know, a finals berth in 15 years after 14 years of being horrible. It's not where the sucking's not worth it unless you actually, as Sixers fans are finding out, unless you actually win something. And it's very hard to win something without one of the best two or three players in the league. I think that's all. I will save all the drafts. Let's just save all of the draft stuff for a couple weeks. Then I guess if we're free, we can do another one of the live drafts. I think that was fun last year, so we can throw that together if we're available.
We could be very excited on draft night when it happens that the Lakers trade the entire roster for John Wall.
I think there's a real, and we'll talk about this later, but I think there's a very real chance there's like 10 teams clamoring to move out of the top 10, or 9 teams, 8 teams, I guess. But
yeah,
I don't know who would actually want to be there. If those picks have any value at all, which I'm not sure if they do, but for some reason people are always way into drafting high, even if there's kind of a consensus that there's not a lot of difference between players 4 and 16. There's going to be some movement, and the Lakers should, if they're smart, be among those teams. But if their fans aren't willing to trade Lonzo Ball for Bradley Beal, I don't know what to tell you.
That'll limit your options.
But that'll wrap it up.
It'll limit your options when your team is relying entirely on the advice of Kurt Rambis' wife.
Right. And a plethora of idiots.
And the ghost of Heath Ledger.
Jesus. All right, we'll be back in a few weeks with a lottery mock draft and some more talks about some other prospects that we like. And then hopefully we'll be back 2 weeks after that for our live mock draft.